It's the Bobmatic Podcast for April 22nd, 2015. Music is in our hearts today.
Aww. To dream.
Medic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and in the booth with me today are
Jeremy,
Bill,
Mark, Amanda.
So the hit TV show Empire has done what few TV shows have been able to do: create a successful narrative TV show that is also a musical.
Since Cop Rock.
I want to play my snob card.
Do it. Oh.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
I'm playing it because I binged Empire this whole, I watched every episode.
Oh, wow.
This last weekend, and it is not a musical.
You know, you never give me a chance. It's premature.
I'm playing my snob card. I'm getting it in early.
It's more of a TV show with music videos.
Exactly.
Okay. With music videos shown in. So they don't, like, sing their lines.
Yeah, there's no plot in the songs. Yeah. It's just, hey, I'm a hip-hop artist, and here's my song, because I'm cool.
But the producers of the show, I think, must be very, very happy because they finally cracked that egg where they have a musical show and then the album from the show sells like hotcakes.
That's just a copy of Glee.
Must hug my copy of Viva Waffling.
Yes. There's where you should have thrown your car. Don't want to bring you down, but...
Okay.
But I guess the show that I'm thinking of is one called Nashville, and I think the producers of Nashville are probably like, why did our record sell that much? Please keep filming here. Okay.
please.
Watch it
on ABC.
Yeah. So to celebrate the success of Empire, Bill begged me to do a hip-hop show, and Mike said, please don't do a hip-hop show. So I just put the difference, and I thought today we would just talk about musicals, or music, wherever you wanted to go with that. Empire... The last couple episodes can be streamed on Fox. You can see the whole thing if you have the cable. Here, some people have this thing called cable.
Also Hulu Plus.
And the library will get DVDs as soon as they come out.
I want to reign over my empire like seas. I want to walk over water and die like Jesus. I want a G5 Learjet fully loaded, all new features. It's easy to travel the world with a lifetime visa. The time of this, how damn it, keep me focused. My mind is a weapon. I gotta keep it loaded. They all wanna see you whenever you make it. They all wanna come with your name in the papers. The more that you give them, the more that they take it. So you gotta remember to cover the bases.
It's like hip-hop Falcon Crest, but instead of wine, it's record labels. Okay, so we split the difference between begging for hip-hop and begging not to do hip-hop, so we just decided for musicals, and today's selections ended up being somehow conservative, yet kind of kinky at the same time. I don't get how that worked.
But, it's us. That's how it works.
That's right. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Somehow conservative choices, but also it's kind of queer. But so, Amanda, what are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about a real musical. This came out
Snob
in...
Card 2.
It's the continuation.
It's a big card.
So I'm going to talk about Kinky Boots, which did just come to Nashville like couple months ago, I think. I did not get to see it, which was very sad. This was written, book by Harvey Fierstein and lyrics by Cyndi Lauper. And it's based on a true story. There was an episode on BBC of the documentary series called Trouble at the Top, which came out in 1999, that basically was about a guy struggling. His family owned a really like high-end family-owned shoe factory that was struggling to make it, and they were getting ready to close, and instead, they actually hit upon this niche market to sell fetish footwear for, you know, men and drag queens and in that milieu, if you will.
Stand back. Let me tell you something. What a woman wants to see. Turn back, Mr. I know everything, but it's what you blindly see. What a woman wants, masculinity. Sensitivity.
What a man.
In a fantasy.
What a man.
What a woman wants.
What a man.
A muscle to clutch.
What a man.
Just a tender touch.
You don't get out too much.
And then in 2005, there was actually a film that came out called Kinky Boots that stars the guy that marries Keira Knightley in Love Actually. He's the Kinky Boots guy. And the library has the film. I have seen
Mr. K Boots.
Mr. K Boots, yes. I have seen the film. It was funny. It's good. It's a good story. So then, and when the film came out in 2005, they started working on this musical, and it premiered in Chicago in 2012. The story is a little bit different. Still has Charlie as the main character, trying to save his family's shoe company. And then Lola, the drag queen, comes in and, you know, needs good shoes. And so then their big goal is to walk the runway at Milan with these new fashion boots. So that's kind of the premise. It was behind, for the longest time, when the year came out, it was behind Matilda the musical. It was like second behind that. And then after they were on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, it kind of just blew up. And so it grossed over $135 million. And they're actually looking at putting it on West End.
What followed this was a long tangential discussion about how many Tonys Kinky Boots won and why Mike knew that the correct answer was 6 and Amanda did not.
So it won Best Musical and Best Score for Cyndi Lauper, which is pretty big considering it was her first outing as a Broadway songwriter. Really big, really huge show. And like I said, we have the soundtrack on Hoopla, we have the soundtrack on CD, and we have the movie. So if you would like to enjoy Kinky Boots, ask Mike. He's a professional.
I have very conservative boots. Thank
yes. You. They are, like in the movie, they're really cool. They're like red, thigh-high, like patent leather. Shiny boots. Like, I would wear them.
Yeah, I did wonder once, where would I find boots? And shoes, because my feet are huge.
Yeah.
Well, if I wanted to pursue this...
If I wanted high heels...
What are the practicalities?
You know.
That's a good...
Well, apparently it's like a joke that shoes break all the time because they're not strong enough. And so, like, that was part of this, that they engineered them with steel and...
Well, well, this is where I get to be the giggly curmudgeon for like the fourth week in a row. Yay! I hate you guys. Anyway, because I really don't like musicals much. Yay! So, in trying to like pick like one that I actually liked, took forever. I finally found one that I liked when I was a kid. I hadn't seen it in a while, but I'm sure it's good. Yay!
Called, do we have it in the collection?
We do. I made sure to look it up, and that will be a plot point later on. You skip it ahead. Today I'm recommending Little Shop of Horrors from 1986, directed by Frank Oz.
Yeah. It is good. I can confirm that it holds up very well.
So Rick Moranis stars as Seymour Krelborn, who is basically every Rick Moranis character ever. A nebbishy doormat whom nobody likes.
It's great when you can use the word nebbish.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like that. Like that's a character that doesn't exist in things anymore, I feel like. Everyone's too handsome.
Ever since Woody Allen became disgusting.
Exactly. Rick Moranis retired.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard in real life, Rick Moranis is kind of a jerk.
Oh, yeah?
Which is why, like, he doesn't work much, because nobody wants to work with him. Anywho.
That's some Ghostbusters lore right there.
Oh. Seymour has a huge crush on his coworker Audrey, and gets continuously berated by his boss, Mr. Mushnick. Seymour's hobby is collecting strange and unusual plants while looking up, around floristry shops in downtown New York City one day during a total eclipse
of the sun. I should be doing that while you're reading.
Yeah, you could totally do what you like there, buddy. He comes upon what looks like Venus flytrap. He immediately buys it and names it Audrey, too. When he takes it home, he finds it doesn't like water or flies or anything. It craves his blood.
Oh, blood, Seymour.
And he even begins to talk and sing as it grows bigger and bigger.
I think I would take that plant back.
I know.
Right? Put that out
It only feeds on my blood. Pfft, you know, flies.
Take that.
Small rats, you know. As it grows bigger and bigger, it craves more than mere droplets of his blood. It needs entire people to feast upon. The plant convinces Seymour to feed it Audrey's jerk dentist boyfriend, Orin, played by an amazing Steve Martin. Yes. In, like, the highlight of the entire film. Yeah. He's a sadistic dentist.
He rides a motorcycle, doesn't he?
Yeah, he comes in on a motorcycle, uh-huh. And he's got, like, you know...
When I was younger, just a bad little kid, my mama noticed funny things I did. Like shooting puppies with a BB gun. I'd poison guppies, and when I was done, I'd find a pussycat bashing its head. That's when my mama said,
what did she say?
She said, my boy, I think someday you'll find a way to make your natural tendencies pay. You'll be a dentist. You have a talent.
You'll be a dentist.
Next week on the podcast, Jeremy sings.
Special features for this week's episode. Oh, yeah, look out for Bill Murray in a cameo playing a dentist or a patient who really, really likes root canals.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing.
John Candy's in it, too. He plays, like, the radio
He's
announcer.
He's like a DJ.
Yeah.
Wink something.
That's so very weird.
Originally, The Little Shop of Horrors was shot in a weekend back in the 60s by Roger Corman. Little Shop of Horrors was adapted to a musical in 1982 that was so popular it went from off-off-Broadway to off-Broadway to Broadway. The film originally had the musical's ending, which got some of the lowest test scores in Warner Brothers history. I believe they said that just to pass, you need a 55, and it got a 13.
That's pretty close. Like, Come on, that's a prime number.
The plant, breaks out of its thing and kills everyone, I think, is what
Well, I wasn't going to spoil it, but yes, apparently. So, yeah,
you didn't say spoiler alert.
Hey, it's not the real ending, y'all.
Now, fun fact, we have the 2012 DVD with the original ending used in a director's cut that totally just put a hold on because I want to see it. Supposedly, it's also one of the most expensive sequences that Warner Brothers ever shot. They're like, we got to cut
this. Got him a 13.
Yeah, exactly.
Overachievers right there.
That's great.
Yada yada, Mark. What about the songs? Well, in researching this, I listened to many of the songs on a popular streaming site fond of questionable legality. And I have to say, the music is pretty amazing.
It's very, like 50s.
Very doo-wop. Yeah. 50s, doo-wop, you know. But the little shop of horrors. I'm reading off the...
Suddenly Seymour.
I like the song Skid Row so much that the phrase still has a positive connotation for me. So I was shocked to find out when I was older that Skid Row is a terrible place to be. Who knew?
Wait, it's bad?
Apparently it's bad. And it's a terrible 80s band.
Oh. 18 and
so,
life.
The one? Do you remember the show Head of the Class that was on?
Yes, of course.
With Howard
that's
Hesman?
The, yeah,
Howard
that's Hesman, the first time I ever saw Little Shop of Horrors because like the class did it as their musical one.
Cool.
Year.
Yeah.
So that was my first foray into Little Shop of Horrors. Like I didn't even know it was Rick Moranis and Steve Martin until I'm like, wait, that's the Head of the Class musical. So that's
Whoa,
how I always kind of
cool.
Like it.
Cool. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah.
They showed
they did
it
that
on
and they did Hair. That was the other one they did the next year. And they argued about the nude scene. If they were going to, the guys wanted to do the nude scene and the girls were like, no, we're not doing that.
They also did a music video for The Future So Bright, I Have to Wear Shades, which I saw recently and it's 80s-tastic and it's 80s-ness.
You can't beat good that? 80s-ness.
You need to see that on a streaming site fond of questionable legality. Sued, that may begin with a Y. What do you got, Bill?
Trivia questions, what I got.
Ooh, trivia question.
Bill Murray, you mentioned him.
Yeah.
Little Shop of Horrors.
I did.
Who played that part in the original movie?
Oh. Jack Nicholson.
Yes.
Oh, little that was known, a good trivia
but
question.
Facts.
You probably know that because I looked it up.
Yeah.
And then he became the Joker.
Maybe his first movie. He thought of The Raven. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw Little Shop the play when it came on Touring Company.
Oh, cool.
And the best thing about it was opening night, and Elvira was there.
What?
Cool.
So, that's
whoa.
Cool.
Awesome.
It was. It
that's
was
great.
I would totally watch that.
What's my brother's still jealous.
What's the guy that played Seymour in the original movie? He was in like a ton of Roger Corman movies.
Was it Dick Miller? Was it?
No, Dick, yeah, okay. He's in it.
Okay, okay.
He's
in, of course,
he's
in it.
That's who I'm thinking of. That's who I'm thinking of. Okay,
and there's a new movie coming out. That guy, Dick Miller.
Which I totally want to see.
Well, anyway, back to musicals. When musical was mentioned as a theme, the first thing that I thought of was the 1972 movie Cabaret. Cabaret was directed by Bob Fosse. It stars Liza Minnelli with a Z, Joel Grey, and Michael York. The movie is based on the 1966 musical by John Kander and Fred Ebb, which is based on Christopher Isherwood's The Berlin Stories, which we still have a copy of in our collection. The movie takes place in 1931 Berlin, and more importantly, inside the Kit Kat Club. Cabaret holds a special place in my heart because I saw it when it was first released in 72 at the Bell Court, probably the first time I went to the Bell Court.
Yeah, cool.
When you think of musicals, one thinks of Sound of Music or Hello, Dolly, something wholesome, and Cabaret is anything but wholesome. It deals with the rise of Nazism, abortion, and the theme of decadence can be fun.
I like it. They like it. This two for one.
Not a traditional music and topics at the time. Also, things I like about Cabaret, all the musical numbers are shot in the Kit Kat Club with the exception of one. So there's no singing out in the prairie with a 50-piece orchestra like in Oklahoma. I can never buy that. That's always my problem with musicals, the orchestra coming out of the sea or something. Also, in most musicals, the camera simply captures the musical performance. In Cabaret, the camera and the performances are one. Bob Fosse also choreographed the musical numbers and made them visually exciting by using editing and other cinematic techniques.
Jazz hands.
Thank you. Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey won Oscars for their performances, both well-deserved, but I must mention Joel Grey as the MC. Wikipedia describes the MC as a leering, ghoulish, flamboyant figure. Joel plays it to the hilt. I think Joel Grey's performance is one of the best ever filmed. Not only does he emcee the events at the Kit Kat Club, but the movie itself. Closing note, Dick Cavett had Billy Wilder as a guest on his show years ago, and Billy Wilder, of course, directed such classics as Sunset Boulevard, Some Like It Hot, The Apartment, and he actually lived during that time in 1930s Berlin, and he asked him, well, what was that like during that time? And Billy Wilder said, well, burn some incense and watch Cabaret. So essentially, I hope I've sold it enough to you. I think Cabaret is a great movie and a great musical. Jeremy, your turn.
Didn't Joel Grey die recently?
No. He has come out that he is gay.
Oh, that's what it was. Yes. Okay. Not the same thing. Not the same thing. Sorry.
My favorite musical is Cabaret, for sure. But we know when I first heard it, it was the Broadway revival with Alan Cumming
was the one I know. Yeah.
As the MC, the mm-hmm. Joel Grey character.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't stop myself from just giving a little shout out, even though I think some people on this table hate this movie, but Dancer in the Dark, Joel Grey, also makes a mm-hmm. cameo appearance in that. You know, it was kind of like, I think, a nod to him and his career, which is another great sort of like non-traditional sad musical that we probably know is going to talk about today.
But also Joel Grey originated the part on the original Broadway production.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
So my whole plan was I was going to talk about Xanadu because I wanted to see it for a long time. And,
yes, I wanted to see that too. ELO does the soundtrack.
Like, yeah, I was going to be some ELO. Like that's
Fred Astaire's last movie, I believe.
Gene Kelly.
Oh, I was going to be confused.
It was like that was the selling point for me. Like I just watched this documentary last week called Los Angeles Plays Itself. There was a clip from Xanadu in it. I was like, well, that's it. I'm going to watch Xanadu. And then I was just like, I can't do it. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I couldn't make it.
Do we have Xanadu?
We don't, but it's available on Hoopla.
Okay, that counts.
Yeah, so I will watch it, and please, everyone else.
Future correction.
Yeah.
I should have Xanadu'd.
Hey-o.
Future correction, Xanadu is atrocious.
No, oh, like, I'm...
Well, yeah, I was kind of, you know, that's sure kind of the appeal. That's kind of the appeal. Olivia Newton-John in a disco musical, how could it possibly be?
Yeah.
Or like, roller skating.
It's got to be awesome enough to mock.
Like, I hate Grease. Like a lot. Like
so then,
really...
why were you considering Xanadu?
Because I could...
that's usually the gateway drug. Which
is the ELO connection, right?
Yeah, I think it's the ELO thing, and also like the complete over the topness of it. Like this sort of really appeals to me.
Anything in roller skates is good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sure.
And also,
I like the idea of like Gene Kelly is like this man out of time, like coming in, like, "Hey, remember me?"
I'm not quite dead yet.
It's disco, guys. I don't know. Because like I've seen footage of him like clapping and like, and then the screen splits, and it just like anytime you throw in a split screen, I'm probably gonna show up. But
I'm sorry, there is one funny story. Michael Beck was the hottest actor in Hollywood. He just did The Warriors.
Oh yeah.
And his famous saying is, "Yeah, The Warriors opened a lot of doors for me, and then Xanadu closed."
There's one really extremely hilarious exchange between Michael Beck and Gene Kelly, but I won't spoil it for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, pivoting from that, I thought, well, what are some other musicals that I like? Because I feel like I have a love-hate relationship with the genre. I already talked about Sweeney Todd on our Valentine's Day episode, which is my favorite musical. It's my absolute favorite musical. I think, and I wasn't here for the baseball episode, but I think of Sweeney Todd as the only musical in the same way that I think of baseball as the only sport. Like, I just think, like...
Oh, I thought you were going to whip out, like, Damn Yankees or something.
No. It's just...
I was trying to think of a baseball musical.
Yeah, that was the only one that came up.
It's just like... It's like... There's others, but no, there's only one for me that lives in my heart. So I have always had a love-hate relationship with the genre because, like, I went to see the film Moulin Rouge in the theater and left dripping with contempt.
Boz Luhrmann,
so you're
really?
A fan of Boz Luhrmann, huh?
I don't want to bring you down.
Don't bring me down.
That movie is fantastic.
I like that movie.
Yeah, that movie is
horrible.
Fantastic movie.
I watched the trailers. Was like,
stop
no.
with the lights out.
That's not
it. It's less dangerous. That's garbage.
How can you sing it?
Garbage.
Because
I hate it. The things that I hate the most live in my heart.
My roommate danced to the Moulin Rouge song at her wedding. That was their song. So.
I hated it. Fantastic. So much.
Got to that scene with Tinkerbell, and I was like, this is the best movie
I've ever
seen.
Pretentious garbage version of A Knight's Tale, mashing up contemporary.
And they sing, and it's very colorful.
I kind of liked A Knight's Tale.
God, I have no reason to lambs. I don't care.
Okay, so moving forward.
But, so still.
We need 10 more tangents before you get to the point.
14 years after the fact, I still have that feeling about it. But then also, like, I have a very clear memory of walking to the park on a school field trip with a boombox on my shoulder, singing along to the Little Mermaid's Under the Sea. So, like, there is a place in my heart that's not just filled with hate for Moulin Rouge and has a love of Disney films. So I do like musicals, and I really like Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I know is like a love-hate thing for a lot of people, and I make no bones about that.
Yeah, dripping with contempt.
Yeah. See, I totally understand. Mm-hmm. I totally understand.
I remember being like 8 or 9. It came to like Fox for the first time.
Oh yeah.
And they're like the world television premiere of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and I'm like, it's got horror in the title.
Yeah.
But surely I like that. No.
So disappointed.
I was glad I fell asleep.
Although
in 30
minutes.
Although
Tim Curry is kind of horrendous.
No, fantastic.
He's boots,
see, I heard the soundtrack from my stepmom and I loved it. I loved it. I was like, hey, saying transvestite, I know what that is. But they wouldn't let me see the movie because I was too young. I'm using quote fingers here. I was too young to see the movie, but it's totally fine to hear the song about saying I'm a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. There's not much of a difference between hearing the singing of it and then seeing Tim Curry in, you know, whatever lingerie he's wearing.
You know, I always play the prude on the show. But, you know, I could see, like, why you wouldn't want a little kid to see that movie.
I think there's a lot of,
you know, like, sex crimes in that movie.
That's true.
That you would be like, I don't want my kids to see that.
Yeah, I was very confused at 8 or 9.
That stuff is in the music, too, is the thing. It's not, obviously, you're not seeing it. It's not quite as explicit. But it's there, too. But... You know, it was fine. I saw it when I was in eighth grade, but it sort of became a sort of goal. I was like, okay, I got to see this movie because it's going to be dirty and I'm going to love it. And then I watch it and I liked it pretty well. It was not that dirty and I didn't love it, but I really did like it, I guess. So I'm just gonna back off from this. I also really like the cult thing around it, even though that is not something that I am on board with. Like, I went to
interjection again.
Yes.
When Fox did their world premiere thing,
yes.
they also were at a theater where they were doing the live stuff. So every now and then the camera, like, they'd show the thing on the big screen and then they turn to like an audience who was doing all their sing along.
That's awesome.
Which was kind of neat.
Yeah. See, I really liked hearing about when all that stuff was explained to me. Like, my stepmom told me about it. My friend's mom was telling me about it. It was like people yelling at the screen and dressing up and acting on stage. I think that's what church was missing for me as a kid. And so
transvestite.
It's like if Jesus was a cross dresser, then I would be on board. I'd be a monk, for God's sake. So
Susan Sarandon would definitely spruce up church.
Exactly. Tim Curry's legs. They're beautiful. So that movie, I quite enjoy it. And I think if it's something that you like even a little bit, you should at least go for the experience of the midnight show.
I'm scared to. I've never done it. And I know that they haze first-time people that go. And so, I'm totally not going to do that.
I was like 15 or 16 maybe when I went. Nothing happened. We didn't drink. There was like people yelling. We were like, we it was just sort of dumb teenagers. And the only thing that was like it was really that memorable that happened was like I can't remember what part it is, but people throw toilet paper around, rolls of toilet paper, and one landed in my friend's lap. And at the time, he was like nailing stuff to the wall of his bedroom, and like he had all this junk, and so he had a roll of toilet paper hung up on his wall. So
interjection 3.
Go for it.
There's an excellent podcast called The Canon, where two film critics debate like what great films should be added to the canon.
Yeah.
And they had an episode last week on the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. Well,
where one hates it, like good people, and the other one loves it, which, like weirdos. Yeah. And she brought up some interesting points as to why it should be entered into the canon of great, you know.
Well, I don't know a lot about its origins. I know it was a stage play. It was very successful in London or whatever. And then the film was like a flop, right?
It was a huge
flop. I like that sort of, I guess it's like the underdog thing or like, you know, because like it is not a quality movie, but I think it is a quality movie.
Proud weirdo. That movie is effing great. I mean,
movies like, I hate that Brian would love, like, I think Rocky Horror Picture Show would be near the top. Yes.
Have you seen it as an adult? It's hilarious.
It's really funny.
Yeah, like,
I thought that you would hate it, personally.
I would put Brian solidly in the
band. I think that 100%. It's the kind of movie that, like, that people would say, oh, Brian would probably like that. That doesn't live in my world.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm someone who, like, knew all the songs and then saw the movie as an adult, and I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, how did I never see this?
It's really subversive and, like...
I don't know if I've ever seen it, like, all the way... sat down and watched it all the way through. I've seen all the parts of it, but...
It really is a good... It really is
the
really
time warp song's pretty good.
Yeah.
See, that's, like, my least favorite, I guess.
Of course.
I like the title song, the late night double feature picture show. I like that song. And I also like Damn It, Janet quite a bit. And I also like the whole ending part where they're all like making out in the pool and don't dream it, be it. And that's a good philosophy of life. Don't dream it, be it.
No work, just orgy. So
that's right. Exactly. No,
I started crawling in bed with people that didn't want me crawling in bed with them. But then bad things happen to me. That's why you shouldn't let your kids see Rocky Horror until they're like mature enough to understand that everything that happens in Rocky Horror isn't cool.
Yeah.
It's just a movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, it's interesting you said it was a flop, and I believe that this is right. It's that when it was playing in midnight to packed houses across the country just on the midnight showing, I mean, I read where it was paying for production costs for Fox.
Oh, yeah.
It was that successful.
Wow.
Like, it more than recouped it, though it went from failure to success.
It's almost like, it's sort of like Star Trek in a way, like how Star Trek sort of, I mean, I think it certainly had its fans when it was on, but then it died. And then it came back and became bigger than ever.
Rocky Horror is a better movie than Star Trek was a TV show. Star Trek was a terrible TV show with a cult, cult following, right?
Shush you.
Don't bring me down!
Terrible TV show, right?
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Okay. Bad sets, green light, horrible acting.
I'm not crazy about the original series.
I'm going to walk out now.
He's talking about the original series.
I'm talking about all of them.
Oh.
Terrible. All right, okay.
Wow.
I didn't think you would besmirch Next Generation.
It's just a jump to the left.
Okay, tickling my fancy are two rappers that said, screw you, record label, and I thought this really worked well with the Empire theme. So the first is Azealia Banks with her record Broke With Expensive Taste, which she released last year by herself. Now, she's been in the news a lot for basically starting fights on Twitter with everyone. So Iggy Azalea, Angel Hayes, Krayshawn, Nicki Minaj, Lady Gaga, Bauer, Rita Ora, and every record company she's ever been involved with, and most journalists.
But she's not hard to work with or anything.
Remember we were talking about John Mayer's, maybe you should shut up.
Yeah.
Right? But Jeremy has pointed out for non-hip-hop fans, it's ironic because they probably get Iggy Azalea and Azealia Banks confused because their names are the same.
Yeah. Even though it confused me when you put it on.
Yeah, right, okay.
And they hate each other.
Now, I was more shocked when this month she appeared on the cover of a gentleman's lifestyle magazine that's been around since the 1950s. I was like, oh, what? I felt like I was living in Rocky Horror World all of a sudden. I was like, what's happening? But then she also... She was also on the cover of Billboard. I was like, okay. She has to
mix it up a little bit.
Media blitz, right?
Hashtag no publicity.
So, but all of this craziness, and I just gotta say, I just know her from experiencing music, finding music through YouTube, because she got famous with this single 212 way back in 2011, and she released it herself on YouTube. So I had experienced this record, Broke With Expensive Taste, and thought it was really good before I don't pay attention to, I don't know, artists on Twitter. Before I knew she was, notorious for having an anger management problem and saying politically incorrect things, right? So this record is really good. It's, very sonically adventurous. There's all kinds of different songs on it, but there really aren't any singles, and I think that's why the record label didn't want to release it, and that's why she released it herself. So, the song that I really love is Young Rapunzel, which is a sort of, angry hip-hop punk mashup, and it also has a very creepy, sexy music video, which Amanda has called out. That's the win for Brian, right? Okay.
But,
I don't know if I can put a sample of it, because I think, I don't think I can edit out the swear words, but the swearing and non-swearing version is available on Hoopla. So here's a sample from the title track, Idol Delilah.
Idol is Delilah. Darling, do you like beijing your coffee, tea, a wild breeze on a day of dawn? Often indeed a child smiles at me cause I'm made of yarn. Dolly, me and my, I'll trade a dollar for your dime. Oh, Idol is Delilah. Trout and trees remind me of my darling D the diver. Diver D was a satyr of father figure on. I made him run away with the steel lung. Follow me a mile. Idol is Delilah.
Like I said, the album is really good, but there probably aren't any singles. But, just because something is not commercially successful doesn't mean it's not great. But it's strange because all these people that she gets in beefs with, they kind of get in this thing about, well, who sells more records? And the thing I'd probably want to say to Azealia Banks is, well, if you make really challenging music, you're never going to sell as many records as other people that make, like, pop nuggets. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's just like, why would you pick on these people that make pop songs? So the one other rapper who she's gotten this beef with is Angel Hayes. And Angel Hayes is someone who released her record herself after she got mad at her record label, Dirty Gold. And I love that record, too. But, like, in that record, like, there's a lot of hooks. It's not as interesting, like, musically as Azealia Banks broke with Expensive Taste. But the song Echelon has had me dancing so much in my room alone more than any other song in the past few years. And so just imagine me alone.
Do you have a clip of that?
I was just going to say, just imagine me alone in my room, lights off. My headphones plugged into, like, my computer tower because I'm a dork with old-fashioned computer, like, dancing, you know, to the song. And I think I could put a sample in here. Maybe we'll have to do some edits of the song Echelon. And please don't run up on me. I get a face of who want me. And you don't want that shade. You better off where it's sunny. And I don't need no French trick. I'm better off with my money. Just alert the freaking masses and let them know that. There you go. Empire is all about a record label that's run by maybe people who are not so nice. Well, here's two rappers that said bleh to their record labels and released their albums on their own, and they're both great. Broke with Expensive Taste by Azealia Banks and Dirty Gold by Angel Hayes.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, I talked about Kimmy Schmidt, the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which was my new favorite TV show. And this week, I want to talk about another TV show that may be dethroning Kimmy. I know. So...
But she's unbreakable.
And this is not really a scripted show, so it probably won't. But it was quite enjoyable.
It's called Dirty Jobs.
Right? Tune in every
opera
week
singer
to the
cleans
adorable
out the
Mike Rowe, who's totally likable, and his voice doesn't drag the mic up. Wow.
No, I want to talk about Lip Sync Battle. Now, this is a new show that is on Spike.
What?
Lip Sync Battle.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Continue.
So, the basic premise is two celebrities go head-to-head. It's hosted by LL Cool J.
Mama said knock you out.
I tell you. And
my head's like a shark's fin.
So the first episode was Jimmy Fallon versus The Rock.
Oh.
And so they do two songs. The
I thought this stuff was on Jimmy Fallon's show. I didn't realize it was
this is an actual
show.
TV show.
Oh, okay.
On Spike.
Wow.
And so, like, the first song they get to pick, they just kind of do it in front of the studio audience. And then, like, they pick a second song with props, and they have backup dancers. And, like, Jimmy Fallon did, like, a virgin. I can't remember. But he can't. What's the one with the whole choir in it?
A prayer.
Like a prayer. Okay. The other like.
Different.
Yes. So, like, he had the whole choir come out behind him, and, like, The Rock did Saturday Night Fever. It had, like, the white tux. And
wow.
But the best
How
one.
How did he fit into those pants?
It was dicey.
That's the point.
So, the best one was Anne Hathaway versus Emily Blunt. And Emily Blunt did Janis Joplin, and no one cared. But then Anne Hathaway came out, and she did Miley Cyrus. She did Wrecking Ball.
Oh.
And her jumping onto a Wrecking Ball
kept
was, like,
anyways.
The best thing I've ever seen on TV.
She recreated the Wrecking Ball video.
Yeah. And this coming week, which I think will be the one that will be just posted after we post this, will be Anna Kendrick versus John Krakowski. And apparently she's got J-Lo on her team, and John Krakowski does Tina Turner.
Wow. These are, like, actual people that I've heard
yeah,
of.
Like, it's like big names, like, and they sell. I mean, they go all out.
Yeah, I'm
reminded why I don't pay for cable anymore.
No, I actually debated talking about this, but for me, I just am crushing on Anne Hathaway big time. I don't really care about Miley Cyrus, but then she...
Yeah, no, I hate Miley Cyrus.
So that when she jumps on the wrecking ball and flips the bird to Emily Blunt, that was, like, maybe the best thing I've ever seen on TV.
I know, right?
Because it was totally just like...
We had to watch it, like, four times, and we just kept going back and watching it.
It was just like, you lost shit. You know you just lost.
They started cheering Hathaway. They didn't even vote.
I just came out in hot pants and jumped on a wrecking ball, right? You on stage,
What's funny is, like, Anne Hathaway and Anna Kendrick could actually sing, too, right? So, like...
Well, that's what they said, that, you know, she actually won a Tony or whatever for, like, Emmy for the Les Mis. Yeah. But it's
Oscar?
All lip-sync. Like, they're not really singing. They have the mic, but it's all lip-sync.
Oh, that's funny.
So Thursdays at 9 o'clock on Spike.
Okay, guys, hear my pitch now. TLC, Air Guitar Wars. We get Slash. We get Joe Satriani. They pretend to air guitar. We'll make all the money because apparently you could make a reality show out of anything.
Wow. Judges Yngwie Malmsteen and Eddie Van Halen.
I would watch that.
Oh, I think I'd watch this.
I would totally watch that.
Slash should be the host.
Yeah. Hey guys, what's up? Slash. Yeah. Welcome to Air Guitar Wars.
And this Lip-Sync Battles did start as a segment on Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show.
Okay.
And it was so popular that they got so,
which is probably why Jimmy Fallon was the first
guest. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. But there also John Legend and Common were both on, but that was kind of sad.
So
and Chrissy Teigen is like the worst side host. Like, she's the co-host, but she just stands in the corner and she was she totally dissed John Legend like the whole way through. He ended up losing.
Maybe they have history.
Ooh.
So...
That's my fun.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm deliberately delaying you guys from talking about comic books. Go for it, Mike.
And go.
And now back to Nerd Corner, where Jeremy and I...
Now back to my corner of the multiverse, by the way.
I'm the Watcher.
Damn it, I was just going to say I'm the Watcher.
And he's Jimmy Elseworlds.
Oh, wow. This is incredible.
Oh, you know, we made a demon joke earlier, you guys. It was awesome. And nobody else got it because they weren't cool. So I'll be Jason Blood. And rhyme. back to the script. Lately, I let Jeremy handle the comic recommendations because that's more of his thing. But I like teasing him because that's the only thing he likes.
The cookie butter.
All right. Yeah, until we made the cookie butter comic book. I could draw it. And, but I read one recently I thought was pretty cool called North 40, written by Aaron Williams and illustrated by Saga's Fiona Staples. These two dumb high school kids, one a goth who hates everything, and the other a nerd who has a big crush on her, get an eldritch spellbook through the magic of IL. Thanks, Amanda.
Welcome.
And using its dark powers, they accidentally... start awakening the dread Lord Cthulhu, the god slash alien of the Lovecraftian mythos, a harbinger of the end of the world. Awesome. And much like in Children of the Damned, everyone in their town immediately goes to sleep, but when they awaken, the county line becomes an impenetrable barrier, and half the town's denizens get superpowers. Can the town sheriff, with the aid of a kid who's essentially Superman, stop some of the bad people in town? Parentheses. There's kind of a justified slash hillbilly mafia type vibe, which I kind of like. You know, some of the families in town are like criminals who get, you know, become supervillains. End parentheses. As well as stopping Cthulhu from waking up. So as the site TVTropes.org says, it could best be described as a magic hillbilly superheroes fight Cthulhu kind of thing. I had fun.
Well, it sounds like there's the... Okay, I watched, you know, 18,000 hours of Empire.
Sure.
And so there's that other Terrence Howard. There's he's in a new series called, it's like Wayward Falls or whatever. It's like the town that you can't.
Yeah.
The town that you can't leave.
It looked kind of cool. The big one trailer I saw.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounded like that. Like I can't think. Who's the other guy that's? I want to say Matt Dillon. He's the main. Like, he can't leave.
Right.
And like Terrence Howard is the sheriff.
Yeah.
Wayward Pines, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
It's something like it's Wayward something. Like, and when you read that, it sounded like that.
So, fellow watcher Watu, what have you got on your section of the Nerd Corner?
This week, I have observed a most impressive feat.
Allergies, they're fun.
Yeah. Wow. Guys.
They are my bane.
It's amazing when I went to Dragon Con the first time, because I always thought that was like a stereotype. Nerds don't actually talk like with high-pitched voices. That's just the movies and TV. And then it turns out I'm the only one who talks like this. Me and my dad. Hey, how's it going? Let's have cool voices.
I have encountered every real-life nerd stereotype at Rick's Comic City in Donaldson. I didn't have to go to Dragon Con.
Well, you know... I didn't talk to people at my comic book store because I didn't talk to people anymore.
Well, I worked at a comic book store for a year and a half. Brian knows the thing that turned me off gaming from almost forever. Like, there was a guy that was, like, standing looking at a magazine. Another guy came up behind him and hit him in the back of the head with, like, a book or something. And he goes, -5 damage, bitch! I was like, nope. Nope.
I know I've heard the story before, but I missed the beginning, now it helps.
Oh, I
know. The context.
Yeah. I also had some people who came in. They were like, "May I see your dice, please?"
Oh, wow.
I'm like, okay. So we get the dice tray out, and they're like rolling the dice on the glass countertop, and I'm like, "What are you?" Like my coworker who didn't care was like, "What are you doing?" And the guy's like, "Oh, I'm just testing for imperfections. There could be little bubbles in the plastic that could affect the roll."
This couldn't be the fabled appearance by Johnny No Brain. Okay. So, he has many dice. More dice than I've ever owned in my entire life, times 4.
My much like I am a proud weirdo who loves Rocky Horror, I am a proud gamer who owns a lot of dice. Though I will say about your dice story, the thing about that guy is, and by the way, we don't have any time for whatever you're going to talk about. But the thing for him to roll over and over, he'd have to do it hundreds of times to have anything that was statistically accurate. Yeah, that's what does it.
No.
He didn't have anywhere else to be.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, read The Fade Out by Edgar Baker and Sean Phillips. It's a underworld of Hollywood in the 1940s. Gunplay, alcoholic writers, and dead blondes. It is great.
Were there any corrections?
I don't have any.
I don't have any either. The Braves won the World Series in 1995.
Oh, they did. Oh.
That's all I got to say about that. For more information, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. Our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week.
Poetry.
Perchance. What is next week?
Oh.
Poetry, right?
What yonder window poetry breaks.
Exactly.
That didn't rhyme. All of the time. Do we know? I mean, they've done 12 episodes. Is that just the first season? I mean, I know it was a mid-season replacement, so.
I thought they said that was like that, full
that's
season.
That's the yeah, first yeah, season. Yeah. And then, okay, so they're going to take a break for a minute. And
that's the first season.
Go write some new songs.
And Mike said, too, at one point you said that they're fighting over money now because it became
a
hit.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, it's Terrence Howard. That's what he does, so.
Yeah, look at also Iron Man 2.
See, also.
Hey, I don't know.
But I will say that I hate Terrence Howard, and, like, I liked Empire because you're supposed to hate his character.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that worked out well, because I'm like, I'm not going to watch more than one episode if I hate him, but I hated him, and I'm supposed to. So.
But that's why I like Alec Baldwin in 30 Rock.
Right? But you're not supposed to necessarily hate him.
I don't know.
I punch him in the face on every episode.
I think, like, he's, like, the nemesis. I mean, these are totally different shows, but they're the equivalent character.
He's supposed to be the bad guy.
Yeah, you know.
I think you're supposed to like him despite... Like, because he does stuff that makes him likable, but only so, like, he does so much, he does just enough to make him somewhat likable, but, like, I don't know.
It reminds me of when, like, people try to get me into dirty jobs, and I'm like, but I hate Mike Rowe. And they're like, yeah, but he gets covered in poop. And I'm
like, you sound just like Mike Rowe.
I'm like, fine. So I started watching it. I'm like, I still hate him, even when he's covered in poop.
Who was an evangelist for dirty jobs?
People.
You know what you really need to say? You really want to see a guy, you want to see how charcoal is made and hate the host?
It's a twofer.
You like guys that wear khaki hats? You know what?
My hatred of Mike Rowe will never die.
You know what Mike Rowe was trained in?
Opera! Oh, man. That's why
he's now scooping poops.
He got his start on QVC.
Getting humiliated on TV for money.
Yeah.
No, I've been on QVC, not on Dirty Jobs.
I love the idea that someone was like, dude, you gotta watch.
So I watched one episode of Empire, and I thought it was good.
Yeah.
But it was the one, I don't know if you remember, but I just picked one at random that was still streaming, and it was the one where, like, it's revealed that his fiance was actually working for the other guy.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
they had to all scramble.
Oh, that's towards the end. That was one of the last episodes.
Yeah, and then they had to all scramble to...
Yeah, like, he cheated on her with his ex-wife, so that makes you feel better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of got, you know, there's a whole thing there. That he was lied and did whatever he wants anyway. But so then, you know, when they all scramble to sign artists, you know, all the family tensions, mm-hmm. like, all came to the, it all came to the surface, right? And all, like, one episode. So mm-hmm. I think it was probably, like, a good episode to watch. And it was, like, a soap opera. But
it was so soap opera.
For what it was, I mean, I thought it was good. I can see why people liked it.
Best soap opera line. So Terrence Howard makes his gay son marry Rudy from The Cosby Show. And then her daughter, like, she comes back later and has a daughter. And they think it's his, like, because he slept with her once because it was before he knew he was gay.
That's all it takes.
So, but then they find out that it's really Terrence Howard's.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Rudy?
It went all the way around the circle.
You know what? But even, like, their...
Happy soap opera.
It kind of... You know what it kind of reminded me of was Scandal, in the sense that Scandal is a show about, like, Washington Scandal and, like, fixers, but just completely over the top, like cartoonishly. And it was also, like, basically like music business soap opera, but...
Which, I mean, like, the music business is totally that way, and it made me very happy I don't work in it anymore. So every day, every episode ended, I was like, yes, I don't have to deal with this. Yes.
And Courtney Love was on it, too?
Oh, yeah, she plays, like, this... She's the original Empire artist. Uh-huh. Like, she's the first one that really hit it big. After, you know, Terrence Howard's character, Lucius Lyons, he was this big ghetto hip-hop star.
I guess
so. I couldn't help but... It's Judd Nelson plays.
Yes, okay. It took me a minute to figure out. I'm like, who is that?
You know, Judd Nelson's in that show.
And I could.
Yeah, he's the other bad guy.
Huh.
And in some ways, I was like, you know what? He feels miscast. But I get I guess maybe one of the things is like, well, no, here's a dude who isn't cool, but he runs the record label, mm-hmm. and like that's a real thing, right? Yeah. There's like some nerdy
kid, white guy.
There's some nerdy guy mm-hmm. who is not hip. But he has good business sense, and he runs the record label. Right?
And he was the guy that found Lucius Lyons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's so then Lucius screwed him.
I can't help but to think that there's this Rick Rubin, Russell Simmons.
Oh, yeah.
There's some Rick Rubin, Russell
based
Simmons
on a true story.
DNA on the show, right? So, yeah.
That's
okay.
Funny.
Yeah.
John, I love, have you guys read Hip Hop Family Tree? Have you read
it? I've seen it go through Interlibrary, but I haven't read it.
Russell Simmons is in it, and it's like early 80s Russell Simmons, so he's wearing like a Adidas hat or whatever, but like the guy draws him with like these like crazy wonky eyes and like this like ridiculous lisp. It's like, this record's gonna be dope. It's hilarious. I have no idea, like, I don't know anything about Russell Simmons' eye health or his speaking
I've never
voice,
noticed.
But,
everybody.
But it's so funny because it's like, wah! I can't.
I tried to watch Empire, but there are no zombies in it.
Not yet. Wait till season two.
Bob's Burgers instead.
I told you Courtney Love was on it.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. I was waiting for somebody to, like, somehow there's got to be a diss on some character or something, right?
I was wondering if she was playing, like, Lortney Dove or something. Like.
I can't think of her name. I don't remember her artist name.
Does she play a hip-hop person?
No, she's like a... Oh, like kind of like a Sheryl Crow, like maybe a little bit more easy listening than her normal character. Not on the show.
Not like in real life.
You know, it's funny. Like at some point, that's going to happen in this show, right? I mean, if the show keeps going, like...
Well, there's already a pretty good body count.
Yeah,
so.
Like there's going to be, like, family members will kill each other, so...
Oh, yeah, it's big.
You got to maintain your empire, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Backstabbing.
That's how the music business
goes. You know what I figured it was, though? It's like hip-hop Falcon Crest, but instead of wine, it's record labels.
Hip-hop Falcon Crest.
I thought it was like King Lear or something.
It is kind of King Lear-ish.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he's like, he's the Russell Simmons character. I mean, I think Russell Simmons is actually probably a nicer guy than the Terrence Howard character, right?
He's a vegan.
And
so is Hitler.
and then his kids are like... They're all fighting over who's going to control the money, and then they all have their various dramas.
He thinks he has ALS, so he thinks he has, like, 3 years to live.
Okay.
Ah.